One of the blessings of life is the privilege of having an honored friend or a family member in your home. And the passage that we study today, or the event that we study, really involves both of those, an honored friend and a family member. And we'll notice what happens. I would like for our purposes today for us to read three parallel passages. All three of these describe the very same event. And I want you to watch for the different perspectives that are offered here. Let me explain this before we read. Matthew, of course, turns out to be the apostle of Christ who's from the tax collector's background. He's not always been among the popular and accepted followers of God, I'll say it that way. And he writes from a certain perspective. Mark is thought to, generally, I think Mark is thought to have been close to Peter, and a lot of people believe that Mark writes from the viewpoint of Simon Peter. Be aware of that. Luke is the, how else do we know Luke? The beloved physician, and he will write from the perspective of especially compassion, I think, for common people, and you'll see that. Now, let's take a minute to read the text from all three perspectives before we begin to work our way through it today. Brian, if you would please be ready to read Matthew's account, Matthew 8, verses 14 through 17. John, if you would please be ready to read Mark 1, a little longer in this case, I extended a little bit, 29 to 34. And then, Brendan, if you'll get Luke 4, verses 38 through 40. Let's look at the gospel record here from these three views, if you would. Anybody? Brian, if you would go ahead and read first for us.
Matthew 8, 14 through 17. And when Jesus was coming into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid and sick with a fever. And he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. When the evening was come, they brought unto him many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word, and healed all that were sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses.
All right, thank you. Now, next, John.
And immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever, and immediately they told him about it. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought in all who were sick or oppressed with demons. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him.
Thank you, John. All right. And then Brendan?
Then he got up and left the synagogue and entered Simon's home. Now Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, so they asked him to help her. Standing over her, he rebuked the fever, and it left her. She immediately got up and waited on them. While the sun was setting, all those who had any who were sick with various diseases brought them to him. Laying his hands on each one of them, he was healing them.
He talks about his authority over the demons in verse 41. Now, that event would be impressive enough if you can imagine it having taken place in your house. That would make it, I think, even more thought-provoking. And here is how unusual would it be to have a family where, for some reason or another, one of the couple's mothers were living with them, apparently living with them, and she has fallen ill, and they're all concerned for her. And the busyness, not business, but busyness of life has to go on, so there are people going and coming in this household. And if you can imagine the mixture of emotions that would occur in a setting like that, then maybe we'll be ready to think today. I asked first on the outline, in what city was Peter's house? Some of you will remember this from last week. Remember? All right. Capernaum. We talked about Capernaum and what size of city and where it was. The reason that we know that is from Mark 1, verse 21, if you notice, that he went to Capernaum on the Sabbath day, entered the synagogue, and was teaching. In verse 29, immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew. So you can see that the house is in Capernaum. I want to point out, before we get to thinking real far into this, that in each of these accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, the priority of the Lord is on teaching, and we'll talk about this more. And this event, I left off the T, notice on event there, you're supposed to be able to imagine that. This event takes place in a context where the issue is authority, the Lord's authority as a teacher. And I've given you verses from all four passages. I want to mention the Matthew account here, especially with regard to authority. By authority, we mean the right to speak and to be heard. And you'll notice at the end of Matthew 7, after the Sermon on the Mount, it says that, this is Matthew 7, verse 29, the crowds were astonished at his teaching because he was teaching them as one having authority. You notice that. In Matthew 8, now in verse 9, there is the centurion. And the centurion has a servant who is lying paralyzed at home and suffering. And this centurion asked Jesus to heal his servant, but noting that he was not worthy, he felt for the Lord to come to his house. He said, just say the word, and my servant will be healed. Verse 9, for I too am a man under authority, soldiers unto me, and I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. That's what he understood authority to mean, the right to say, go, do, come, and to be obeyed. The authority of the Lord extends to the winds and the waves. In Matthew 8, verses 26 and 27, when he calms the great storm that was swamping the boat, remember? He rebukes the winds and the sea, and there's a great calm, and they marvel at it and say, what sort of man is this that even the winds and sea do what? Obey him. That's the. And then the Lord's authority is such in Matthew 9, verses 1 through 8, that he had authority to forgive sins on earth. You'll notice that they were afraid and glorified God who had given such authority to men. Now, we go farther, but I just point out that what happens at Peter's house happens by way of confirming his authority, confirming the authority of Christ. By confirming, what do we mean? I'd say proving, demonstrating. That would be the idea. That's one part of it. And the other part would be compassion. The Lord helps people because of his compassion. So confirmation and compassion are both important in this event. Now, into the text itself. How does Mark's record differ from the others in the way this house at Capernaum is described? Did you notice as we read it? Whose house do Matthew and Luke say this was? All right, they say Matthew, Peter's house, Luke, Simon's, the house of Simon. How does Mark, on the other hand, describe this house? Simon and Andrew's house. Now, that may suggest that the house had belonged to their father. We don't know that for sure. It may suggest, a lot of people think it does, that that this is evidence of Peter's influence, and that Peter's humility is such that he would describe it to Mark as his and Andrew's house, and not just his alone. It was a big enough house that James and John could visit too, so we know there were at least Peter and his wife and his mother-in-law and the Lord and James and John. The children are not described, but you're to regard this as pretty much a busy household, I think, in the working household, if you can think of it that way. It's interesting, I learned about this, some of you will know this, that excavations in the Capernaum, there is I can't remember the age period of a church building on the site now that's supposed to have been excavated, and there was maybe a 5th century church building that had been erected there, and supposedly that underneath it is the site where Simon Peter's house was in Capernaum. I don't know if that's anything to that or not, but I know that that tradition is interesting. And this happened at a real place, in other words, and just remember it that way. So anyway, you see the idea that this place is a working man's house, and it's a busy place with people coming and going. Now, a little farther into the character here. What important fact is established by the point that Peter had a mother-in-law? What? He was married. All right, that's the obvious fact, isn't it? Peter was not a more holy or less holy man because he was married, and he was a man who was acquainted with the very real and down-to-earth relationships of family life that included having a wife and having an extended family and having the family ties that involved. Now, I want you to look at 1 Corinthians 9, at verse 5, and tell me what important information we have here. We know that during Jesus' ministry, Peter had a mother-in-law who was a member of his household. All right, say it louder. All right, other apostles were married as well, and they took their wives with them. What else can you gather about Peter's wife in particular? Now, during the ministry of Jesus, this happened, we'll say, somewhere around 30 A.D. Most people think that 1 Corinthians is written somewhere around, 55 or something like that. So 25 years later, what do you gather from 1 Corinthians 9 about Peter's wife? She was a believer in the Lord also. Maybe she was a believer partly because what the Lord had done for her own mother in her own house. What else? I take it from 1 Corinthians 9 that Peter's wife was still alive, and that they had not had the privilege of staying in their house at Capernaum because Peter had led a believing wife with him wherever he went. I take it that she was a partner in the work that Peter did. You see how I can gather all of those points. Do you think I'm going too far with that? Now, the problem that one of the immediate things, if you try to take the tradition that would make Peter the original pope, for example, then can you see the problem you would have with this? There is no forbidding to marry, and there is no no indication that celibacy was involved, for example, with Simon Peter at all in this case. Now, notice next the way the different writers describe what happened when the Lord entered the house. This is an interesting thing, and there's an important point about Bible reading that comes up here, I think, as well. What does Mark say? Can anybody fill in my blank there? All right, immediately he entered. He had a busy day teaching at the synagogue. He left the synagogue and entered the house with Simon and Andrew and James and John. And immediately they told him about her. So in this case, Mark says the members of the household, I don't know who it was. Was it Peter? Was it Peter's wife? They told the Lord about her. Then what does Luke add? Luke 4:38. Who? Tell me. Do what? All right. All right. Maybe there's some translation differences. In Luke's account, what did you say?
He called it a great fever.
All right. That's one step ahead of me here. Okay. That's true. All right. They appealed. They made requests. They appealed to him on her behalf. Now, I'm going somewhere with this, so think about it. They told him about her. But they did not just say, Peter didn't just say, my mother-in-law is over there sick. Don't bother with her. They have some concern for her well-being enough to appeal to the Lord. Now, why would they appeal to him on her behalf? What does that tell you?
They knew he could do something.
He had been helping people already. His fame, notice Mark 1 and verse 27-28, his fame had spread because he had already had the unclean spirits obeying him. They believed the Lord could do something to help her. All right, and it was appropriate that they asked, and he wasn't offended by that. And then see, in Matthew's account, what does it say? All right, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying sick at the feet. All right, now, this is one of the reasons I bring this up is this is the category of Bible descriptions that often leads critics to say the Bible is full of contradictions. That these three accounts are not the same. Now this is a simple illustration. Some of these claims are about more serious issues, for certainly, but do these three statements contradict each other? Say it louder.
They complement.
They complement each other. How do they complement each other? A contradiction would be if Matthew says the Lord saw her, and Mark says the Lord didn't see her, that'd be a contradiction, wouldn't it? But if one says he went into the house, they told him about her, they appealed to him on her behalf, and he saw her, you can envision in your mind that taking place, can't you, John?
Anytime you do investigation work, and you ask more than one person, you're going to get the story told in different accounts. People see things different. Mark might have seen it as he was close enough to him, he heard him say, whereas Matthew might have been farther away and just seemed to be with.
Okay, we don't have the indication that either Matthew or Mark are there, or Luke. They come on the scene later, and they write from the eyewitness accounts, but also certainly from the idea of inspiration. And the point that you're making is These all three can be true in a natural progression. A man walks in the door, talks to people, and then goes to where she's laying. That would be a natural thing. Now, what additional detail does Luke provide about the nature of her illness? Brian.
Yeah, a great fever.
All right, a great fever. All of them say that she was sick, lying, she was down, that she was sick with the fever, but Luke says it was a high fever. Now, why is that of interest? Luke is the doctor. He's the one who would describe the extent of her condition here. Now, how many of you have ever had a high fever? How do you feel? All right. If you lie down with a high fever, what probably can you associate with that? I'm not talking, but don't attach a name to the disease, but what other things would be true of your condition? Will you?
Weakness.
All right, weakness. Will you chill? Will you ache? I read the commentaries and stuff about this, and they'll say maybe this was malaria. They lived by the sea, and maybe that'd be the cause. We don't know for sure about that, of course, Brian.
When you look at it, if this was a regular fever,
yeah,
these men wouldn't have concerned themselves with it so much. But even with Luke calling it a great fever, being a physician, he's got some serious concerns for her well-being.
Right, right. Yeah, this could be a dangerous thing for a mature person, we'll say it that way. Now, all right, now with that in mind, what does the Lord do about this situation? He's been busy all day. If it's a fever, it could be catching, couldn't it? He could say, I don't want to start something here. That's not the main reason I'm here. She'll get over it. What do you expect me to do about it? But they've appealed to him on her behalf. So let's watch what the Lord does. And again, I've used the three passages. I think each of them sheds some interesting light on this. What does Luke 4:39 say? All right, before he did that, he went to her, and Luke says he stood over her, which is an interesting detail, it seems to me. And he rebuked the fever. Now, what does that mean? How do you rebuke a fever? If our children are misbehaving, we rebuke them. If they're sick, we take care of them and give them medicine. What does it mean that he what does it mean to rebuke? Getting on to it. All right, he got on to the fever. He put it in its place. In other words, he had authority. Oh, this is the same word that is used with regard to how he treated the wind and the sea. He rebuked them. This is the same word that would be used whenever somebody did the wrong thing, and he would rebuke them. It's the same word that was used when he's dealing with these unclean spirits and making them be quiet and so forth. When Satan was active in a supernatural way, we'll say, the Lord, with supernatural power, corrected, put it. So he rebuked the fever, put it in its place. Then Matthew says he did what?
Touched her hand.
All right, he touched her hand. Can you imagine what that would have been like? Do you think he went like this? No, I see more that he touched her hand. Now, what would be interesting to you about that? All right, I see it as a compassionate act. Don't you think? I see it as caring or concern, and you see that idea. And then Mark 1:31, what does it say? All right, he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. All right, that doesn't mean he jerked her up, but he rebukes the fever, he reaches out and touches her, and he takes her by the hand, like a gentleman helping a lady, and she gets up. Now, I had you a while ago to say how you felt, what other things were true if you had a high fever. If you've ever had a high fever and you just got up, what would happen? Probably fall back down. You may feel dizzy. You may feel weak and wobbly. It certainly would take a while with that. What do all three records say the fever did? All right, the fever left her. And the idea is that it left her right then. It left her right away. He lifted her up. The fever left her. Now, make the connection. You're in the house. You know that this beloved family member, I think that she was, her illness was even more noticeable because I can see what she does after she's helped. That tells me what she's been doing beforehand. And you have expressed your concern about her condition to the Lord. You see him, go to her, rebuke the fever, touch her hand, lift her up, the fever leaves. What do you conclude? He healed. All right. That the fever was subject to his authority too, right? That he had the power to bless her like this and to lift her up. Now, does this mean that every time anyone in our house ever get sick, if we love the Lord enough and ask him, he'll give them back to us right then? All right, that doesn't happen in the book of Acts, even with great servants like Dorcas. I mean, she's raised up, but not, she died. You know, the illness is takes her first. Or say in Epaphroditus in Philippians 2, who was at the point of death, even though he was a faithful servant to God. What does this mean then to us? If we have illness at our house, what does what the Lord did here mean to us? What lesson can we take from this safely?
What happens,
all right. First, the idea would be that he cares about this kind of thing in the families of these people. All right, that's one lesson. What else do you see?
We can appeal to him.
All right, that it's right for us to appeal to him in behalf of the people we care about. What else? He has power over. He still rules. He still has authority, regardless of what happens. Now, bear in mind that this happens still in view of the fact that will be true until redemption is all finished. And that is that the days of our years would be 70, or if by reason of strength, 70. We add to that some these days. But it's, in other words, it still is true that this world is, that this tent that we live in is going to have to be remade before it will be a permanent dwelling. And we live in view of that fact, even with illness here. What detail does Luke add Now, all of them say that Peter's mother-in-law did what? Got up and served. What does that say about our response to being helped by the Lord? How is Peter's mother-in-law lesson to us there? Did all right? Why do you think she did that?
I think that's
what
she did before.
I thought what she did before. Did the Lord say, "All right, you will get up, and get to work"?
No, but I think she was grateful.
All right, that's the gratitude. That she is a lesson to us, and gratitude for having been helped, and then wanting to serve over. Now, what one detail does Luke add to her getting up? He's the fellow who said she had a high fever. She rose up immediately. All right. In other words, there wasn't a recovery time here. It was an immediate thing. She gets up immediately, goes about her business of helping. That would say that her cure was immediate and that it was complete. All right. She had strength enough to go about this. Now, all right. Now, was Peter's house blessed because the Lord went home with him? That's one of the lessons here, I think. Was he? Was it?
Well, everybody in the community came over.
I am. Well, that's my next question here. I don't know if Mrs. Peter said to him, "What are you doing bringing all these guys home with you when my mother is sick here?" With no record of that, but she would have been, that would have been fair for her to say, wouldn't it? You know, I don't know about all of that, but Peter's house was blessed here. A beloved member of the household and a valued member of the household who was seriously ill has now been made well, and the person who made her well is a guest in the house. That's a great day. All right, now, but to Brenda's observation now, what happened to Peter's house in the community because the Lord had blessed his family?
They brought
theirs over. Mark's account, Mark 1 and 33. That evening at sundown, I take it, there wasn't a party line. There was no Facebook. But the word got out, didn't it? All right. That's good. A very good observation that I hadn't thought of. That's why it's at sundown. Sabbath ends then. And so as soon as they can, they get their loved ones to Peter's house. And describe the scene for me.
Whole house was surrounded.
All right, everybody gathers around the door, wanting them to help him. The time is getting away from us here, so let me quickly say the other part of this. Matthew 8:17. What does Matthew say this means? I wish we had a lot more time at this point. This is a part of redemption that we haven't thought about enough. Peter uses Matthew uses the quote from Isaiah 53, the great passage where he bears our sins and carries our sorrows and all of that. And how does Matthew say that prophecy is fulfilled here? All right, the Lord does something to deal with the guilt or consequence of sin, but he's also showing here the power to send away the disease and the pain and the heartbreak and the sorrow that is in our world because of the fall, so to speak, if I can say it that way.
Well, in a sense, it turns away from the sin.
All right. Any of Satan's realm, he shows the power over it. He's able to send it away. I think there is a remaking that's implied there. All right, I want to note with you, and this will come up in some other lessons, but I think this is important. The difference between a miracle and providence there, or between the miracles of Jesus and the claims of miracles that religious hucksters have sometimes shown today. Here are the five characteristics of the miracles of Jesus. First, there is the immediate accomplishment of something which otherwise might occur in the providence of God, but which would occur with care over the process of time. There is some kind of demonstration, either by word or by touch or both, which shows that this is done by the authority of Christ, that He is the one who did it. In both the manner of the work and the treatment of people, there is ethical propriety to the miracles of Jesus. He does not make a big magic show of it. He doesn't sell tickets and gather a crowd. He doesn't embarrass or humiliate or belittle people. In fact, in some cases, he tells them to keep quiet for them, what he has done for them. And it is connected to his compassion for them. The end of Matthew chapter 9 will show. There is the necessary variety. They bring the people from the city to the door, and he heals not just the ones who have fevers, not the ones who have back pain or who are hard of hearing, or you see what I'm getting? He heals them all, it says. And he has the necessary, there's a variety that has authority over the wind and the waves, over sin, over disease, over distance, and even over death. And then there are reliable and numerous witnesses who in a position to know the true situation about the person who is being helped, and therefore about the one who is doing the helping. Those five characteristics of the miracles of Jesus, I think, are important markers for us. All right. Did Bell 1 and Bell 2 both get me?
There's two.
They did.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks so much for you guys being with us. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Have a great week.